This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's always a relief when we get a chance to talk to this guy, and it just last week felt empty. Felt like we were missing something. I think we landed on why there's such a hole in our soul. Without the kind and wise words of this man soothing us last week, he is with us this week. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. The one, the only, Paul Moyer is with us. Hello, Paul.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure. I got to come with it, man. I've got to solve all the problems. I got to get everybody excited.
Yeah. Yep.
And one of the
Well, you had a week off, Paul. So that's why we're relying on you.
It didn't feel like a week off with the Mariners. Matter of fact, Dave, I think a couple of my group texters have actually jumped off.
There's room?
There could be room.
A spot has opened up.
I know, I've been on a waiting list. Paul, I was telling them that I am on two other text chains with you. So, you know.
He said that's enough.
I don't want to wear out our friendship, okay? That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, I tried. I mean, we could use somebody right now. I was reading some of our texts over the last week or so, and it is pretty comical. From there's a lot of four letter words in there that we can't throw in there. There's blame, and there's from the stadium to service to the players to ownership to, it's just the grave pit of the world, the Mariners. Whenever somebody comes here. But it is remarkable. I mean, how much that people love the Mariners when they haven't been to the playoffs since 2001, and also how it affects their moods. I mean, it ruins people's evenings, and I need them to understand that they got to get their act together.
Yeah, that's. I was going to ask, did you, amongst all of the four letter words and the back and forth in your text groups, did you come to a conclusion as to what is ailing this team? To me, it's a bunch of different things, Paul. But I'm curious, just from your perspective, what is it that stands out most to you that you're seeing that you find troubling with this team?
Well, I mean, obviously troubling's them losing. I think the most troubling is it's kind of the pitching. I know everybody's been on the hitters, but what was our strength supposed to be coming into the season? I mean, it was pitching. And when you go and we're on the road and we have the lead, 4-0, 5-0 against Boston. We lose both those games. We've got leads against Oakland. We lose those. We went from the third, I think, best at, runs allowed, when we were 11-6 to, I think we're second to last now in the American League. That's the troubling part and the confusing part, because the starters aren't injured, right? I mean, we're pretty strong across the board, and I get the bullpen has certainly not been what we hoped it would be. So if our pitching was pitching to the level that they were capable of, we're in this thing still. Maybe it's not a great record, but we're not 10 plus games back on the West, and we're no means out of it in the wild card. Boy, there's a lot of people now we got to start leapfrogging.
Yep. How about Ty France? Let's talk about something that's positive, Paul. The other day, gosh, what was the number? It was like it, with runners in scoring position.
It's like 400 or something.
Yeah. They were talking about how he actually loves that. He loves to get into those situations, but – yeah, I can't find, 405, two home runs, 22 RBIs with runners in scoring position, Ty France. And then, he just, to me also, it's such a shock when you see him drop a ball. And I know he did in Miami and Toronto, pop-ups that were just went off the heel of his glove. But his defense has been really phenomenal as well, and just kind of brings you back to that trade with the San Diego Padres that brought Ty France here.
Nah, it's a great trade. And, here's a guy. It is remarkable how successful he's become. And, actually, I've been listening to you guys. He's really been successful every level he's ever played at. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, again, people look at one thing and think maybe they're not an athlete. And that's, top flight speed. But he is an athlete. He's got great hand-eye coordination. He's become a great first baseman. We know he can play third base, too. He's become by far our best hitter. He's really I guess Crawford. We could say there's two guys playing above their level, and I think you could probably throw in Rodriguez as well. I mean, I don't think I was hopeful, but I didn't think he was going to be as good as he is this early on. But nobody else. I mean, everybody else is playing below what we had hoped coming in to this season. And France, I still believe the core is there for us. I mean, France is young, Crawford's young. We have young pieces to this. It's just the most mind-boggling, perplexing. How are they? What was the number? 18 and 27.
Is that what they are now?
But I mean, since our 11-6 start. You know, we're all going back to, we haven't won back-to-back games against the same opponent since April 23rd, 24th, and that was Kansas City. I mean, that's over a month ago. And again, this team's too good for it to be there. And so now everybody's going to be pointing who's to blame. You know, is it service again? Is it the Poto? Is it ownership? Man, when you're in a season where you are right now, it's on one group. It's the players, man. They're the ones who get to go between the lines, get it done. Somehow they've lost that confidence. They find ways to win rather than win. And again, as much as I like to be, pointing blame somewhere, it's on the players. I mean, they're the ones who got to circle the wagons. It's not on service or anybody else. I mean, it's the players who've got to get it done. And it's not too late, but boy, it's starting to get pretty close.
Boy, I was just looking at the salary numbers for the Mariners. Ty France makes $734,000, which is, I would love to make that much. That's amazing.
Yes.
But in his world, his profession, even on this team, you're going, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Dylan Moore makes more than he does. Luis Torrens makes more than he does. Kyle Lewis, who we like and is a young guy, makes more than Ty France. It's amazing. He's making $734,000. The highest paid position player, by the way, on this team is Eugenio Suarez at over $11 million. And then Robbie Ray is the highest paid at $21 million. But Ty France, I'll have to look up where he's at with his contract and arbitration and all that stuff. But whatever it takes, lock him up. He just can't go. He can't be allowed to go anywhere. I mean, he is the Russell Wilson of this team in the way of what he produces versus what he's being paid, the bargain that those guys were before Russell got his big contract and was winning Super Bowls, making, what was it, $500,000-some. Yeah. That's Ty France right now, where you're just going, are you kidding me? This guy's making $730,000-some for what he's doing. He's one of the best hitters in all of baseball right now, and it's amazing.
Yeah, the numbers are support him too. You know, not just obviously statistically, but even in his deeper numbers, his strikeout ratio, just the way he puts the ball in play. He's not going to make $700,000 for very long. That's obviously a great value. Is this his fifth, sixth year up in the major leagues?
He's 27, but he hasn't really. His experience level isn't that of a guy that came in at 20 years old and. I think this might be like his third full year or something like that.
This is his fourth year. So 19 through 22, I believe. 2019 is the first year for him with the Padres.
Well, yeah, look at last year was the first year he played over 100 games.
Yeah.
So he played 69 games his first year in 2019, played 20 games for the Padres, and then 22 games for the Mariners in 2020. So 42 games there. So last year was his first full season of baseball. How about that?
Yeah, that's amazing. And, he's top 10 hitter in the league right now. He's going to make the All-Star game. And, he's probably up for arbitration. He's going to make some money. And you know what? There's some guys you want to pay. He's one of them. And part of it, he's such a great clubhouse guy. I mean, he's definitely a leader in that organization. Players love him. So, yeah, Crawford, I mean, there's some guys you want around for the next 10 years if possible.
Now, Paul, you're a baseball guy, obviously, and, also you were a football coach. And we've just been kind of talking over the last couple of weeks about, if you're Scott Service, like what do you do? Do you go Bull Durham and try to scare them, and throw the bats into the shower?
They're kids, scare them.
Yeah. Because you can do that in football, right? I mean, I remember we used to kick the coaches out and have a team meeting. I remember before a game that we beat the Raiders in L.A., And there was a young, strong safety named Paul Moyer that stood up and gave a very fiery speech before that. We went out and won. I think we went 8-8 and won the AFC West. But, you know, you could
9-7.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, look, you can do that in football, but like baseball, it's like, what do you do? How do you get these guys fired up? If you're Scott Servais, it's got to be difficult knowing, hey, do we just stay the course? It's a long season. You know, now all of a sudden people are saying, well, forget the whole long season thing. It's getting, you know, late into the season now, almost a third of the way through. But just as far as it's got to be a difficult task for Scott Servais to try to figure out how do you get these guys going?
Yeah, boy, it is different from football because, you know, we're practicing, we're playing once a week, you know, they're playing every single day. And, you know, what is Scott Servais? Is he last year manager that, you know, won all those one run games and, you know, definitely had the pulse of the team, made all the great moves? Or is it this year where you're questioning every move? I mean, I question every move now. And I go, why is he doing that? But, you know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks. I mean, he's got to make those decisions. And, you know, he talked about shaking it up. And I think he's trying to shake up maybe some of the things he's done. But then you get down that path, too, where am I doing too much? Am I shaking it up too much? It's not an easy answer, obviously. I think everybody feels like the talent's there. And that's why I keep going back to players. I go, they're the ones who've got to do this. They've got to be clutch when there's two outs and there's runners in scoring position, and our bullpen's got to get back to closing games out, which we expect when they get the lead. But I've been through the worst time I ever went through was 1994. I was coaching. It was my last year coaching, and we started out 3-1. We were a team that was on the rise. So we had some young talent after, you know, basically rebuilding in 1992. And then the injury bug hit us and we went on a terrible losing streak. I think we lost like 6 games in a row, and it felt like a black cloud. It feels like a death every time you walk into the building. I mean, it's just you. The players hate to lose. I mean, you're trying to get rid of that, and you just don't know how to do it. This one almost feels like that too, because this losing streak is so long. I mean, you've got a month now where it's a pretty good sample size, right? I mean, where you cannot win back to back games. You're losing games you normally would win. It's going to take one of those for them just to hit the rock bottom, which I felt was probably 2 weeks ago. But it's going to take something where they just finally say, what the, you know what? Let's just go out and have fun like we did in high school and college or whatever it is. We just got to turn this into a fun game again. And right now, this is not fun for them. I mean, they probably don't even like showing up, you know, to the ballpark every day.
Hey, we were talking briefly about Alonzo Highsmith moving on to his alma mater at University of Miami and running things out there, which, hey, congrats to him. Good for him. I'm sure it's a step up in pay, I would assume, and profile and all of that. What does it mean to the Seahawks front office? I don't know exactly what his role was. I mean, I know his title, but is he integral to what they were trying to do? Or Pete and John behind the scenes going, oh man, what do we do now? Or how do you see his position? I was never really clear on exactly what it was he did behind the scenes.
Yeah, he was only with us, 2 years, and it sounds like he was more of a consultant to John Schneider. Dave, maybe you know more about this than I do. I just what I've read. Here's what I will tell you, though. Most organizations, man, one guy leaves, and if you don't have a succession plan in place that promotes somebody from within, where it's you're cross-training people, man, rarely does one guy who's not making all the decisions, you know, affect the organization that much. So I can't imagine that John's stressed out about it. I think it's more of a compliment to what they do to develop people and have them get opportunities elsewhere. And it doesn't matter how much you make. Well, I couldn't say that to it. Take away the money side to an extent. I mean, you always want to be in position that you get to make the decisions. And, you know, if that's what he got at the, you know, at University of Miami, he got a chance to go home, you know, good for him. Because he wasn't getting John's job. And there's some people, they just look at it and say, well, this is my next career step. And so, but I don't think it's a huge impact to the Seahawks organization. They've, my guess is they've got quite a bit of talent in that pipeline.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was trying to remember, and I don't know why I couldn't remember his name, Ryan Grigson. Grigson was the GM for the Colts. And then he came here as a senior football advisor. And then, and I thought he was still here. He was here in 2018 and 19. I remember talking to him a couple times. But then 2021, he goes to Cleveland. Now he's with the Vikings. So, you know, this, as far as what's it called? A senior football consultant or senior football advisor. Paul, that, why didn't you go into that? It seems like that would be would have been a perfect. Of course, they probably weren't spending that kind of money back in the mid '90s for, you know, having having guys around, right?
Yeah, Dave. If I knew more, well, let's put that. If I had the knowledge I have today, and it took me back to when I was 32, 33 years old at the time, I would have gone in probably a lot of different directions in the NFL. But I didn't know. You know, yeah. I knew about coaching. I knew about playing. I mean, I didn't know necessarily how to run a company and finances like I do today. Because you're right. There's a lot of roles now I look at in the NFL and I go, oh man, that would be really interesting. That would have been fun to have done. Yeah. So, you know, part of it is just, you know, it's a career path that, you know, you got to make decisions on. But yeah, you know, look, if John and them want to call me up to be a consultant, I'm in.
Well, no, it's kind of interesting what you said, because like back in those days, and that was like the end of my career, you know, the NFL was great. I mean, it was a good organization, but didn't really have any idea that like the draft would be like the highest produced, or, you know, at the end of every year, what is it, like 20 of the top 50 shows are, you know, NFL games. And, yeah, you know, it's become, and there's so much more money spent because, you know, you have, there's no salary cap for coaches and advisors, right? So
they could pay Paul all kinds of money to do that job.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
They could break the bank for you, Paul.
Again, John, I will give you a hometown discount.
Yeah.
So again, if they want to call, but you're right, Davis, the amount of opportunities in the NFL are probably tenfold.
Right.
I think I don't know how many people are employed by the Seahawks, but it's got to be, and take away the players, it's got to be 200 people, maybe 100, you know, 100 to 200. I bet you when we were there, Dave, there's maybe 20, 25. You know, I mean, you had some scouts and you had a few assistants along the way, but the scouting department wasn't nearly as big. You didn't have a bunch of consultants along the way. You didn't have nearly the training staff that you have today. You didn't have specialty weight trainers and all, I mean, it goes on and on. So all the stuff they do in the community, from digital, I mean, the opportunities in the NFL are huge compared to what we had back then. And so if you didn't play, coach, or were a scout, there wasn't a lot of opportunities when we were done.
Yeah, I was going to say double that number, 400. I mean, as far as you look at that whole, you know, just the football operations, but, you know, maybe you're right. But, yeah, I mean, you didn't have all of those different things. And also, we didn't have a kitchen, that's for sure. I remember that.
We didn't have chefs. We didn't have grass-fed steak every day. We had to get our own food, and most of us didn't grab food, so we starved until practice was over.
Dave was eating mac and cheese at his house every day.
Yeah. Oh, Dave.
No,
Dave,
you know what? Yeah, Paul, you know this. I was not a dieter. I didn't, you know, healthy. It was beer and macaroni and cheese. I remember one time I came to work with macaroni and cheese because the first day I starved, and I forgot my spoon. And so there was like there was no spoons or anything like that, and I think I used my pen to shovel it into my mouth is how we ate. So yeah, lots has changed.
Well, when I had you over for Thanksgiving one day with when you were very young, and my sister-in-law, after you were done eating, she goes, "Did you taste the food?"
He just inhaled
it in. He just shoveled it in.
I remember looking up, like, and everybody stared at me. I'm like, wait, how come everybody's not done like me?
She was a about 12 years old at the time, maybe about 15, and she couldn't stop staring at you while you were eating.
Yeah, it was like a savage.
It was like Dave was in prison guarding his food and just getting it down before anybody could take it.
Well, I had an older brother.
Hey, quickly, Paul, before we let you go, we're up against the break, but just a quick thought from you. The Las Vegas Raiders, we're saying it right. We're
about you?
Three, I think, today. They give Colin Kaepernick a workout, the first official workout I think he's had since all of this. What do you expect? I'm more of on the curiosity end of things of just, you know, people say, oh, he stinks, he can't play. Others saying he absolutely can. Well, none of us know. We haven't seen him. We've seen little clips when he went and worked out with, you know, on the Michigan campus and things like that. But I'm just curious to hear reports of, yeah, he looked great, he's got everything still intact, or nah, he's lost some arm strength or movement or just something. I've not heard a word, but what are your expectations? What do you think comes of this?
Man, it's been 5 years. So my expectations are high. I really hope they sign him so we can actually stop talking about this. when I hear people say, oh, he'll help the Raiders, just like you said, Bob, how would you know that? No one's seen him play for 5 years. And the one thing I know is you don't get in better shape. Your arm doesn't get stronger. You don't make better. You probably do make better decisions, but not if you haven't played the game in 5 years. I just don't see how this plays out well, you know, for somebody who's been away from the game that much. But I do hope they sign him just so we can put this to bed. Yes, he can still play. No, he can't play. And let's not talk about it again.
But Paul, it gives us almost a segment a week when he's active. You know, it's provided plenty of radio.
It's amazing a workout how much media attention for an official workout. So, but good for him. I whatever it is, I just hope they sign him or they say, yeah, he's lost it. It's not there.
Hmm. Paul, we appreciate it. We look forward to it every week, and I look forward to Dave's addition to your Mariners text group now that the seed has opened up. So,
Bob, I was talking about you, buddy.
I couldn't. As much of an honor as that would be, I couldn't do that to Dave. I couldn't jump the line.
All right.
Dave's my guy. I couldn't do it to him. Hey, Paul, we appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
There you go. There's Paul Moyer. If you missed any of that conversation with Paul or any of our guests, or maybe you just want to hear him again, which I don't blame you, head to the podcast page, seattlesports.com. You can also search Wyman and Bob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. But the key to it all, Dave Wyman, is to do
subscribe.
What? Click
subscribe.
Subscribe. That's right. That's right. He says with subscribe. All the enthusiasm in the world, subscribe.
Can somebody fix my email?
You still can't get into the email?
Texted in.
You said they were trying to get you to quit. Maybe you've been fired and locked out of your email.
It could be.
You didn't realize
it. Yeah, and I'm not even being paid to come here. Yeah,
I appreciate you showing up for me even though you're not being paid. That's great.
And I can't get on the text toy either because the instructions for that were on my email.
Oh.
And I didn't.
There might be a win to you not being on your company email, though.
I didn't get a chance to practice.
That's right. Practice your texting. All right. Coming up, despite their offensive struggles, are the Mariners still better off without Chris Bryant? We'll talk about that next. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station. Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Got John Morosi coming up at 5 o'clock, and we'll see if he can speak some sunshine into this gloomy Mariner season. Send us a text, 206-421-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Boy, you know what? I don't think Bob's here. Is this an old show sheet by any chance? This might be. Anyway, Bob has wandered off somewhere, and here we are left to talk about Chris Bryant and the year that he's having. And this is one of the things that, you know, we talked about making you sad is when somebody gets hurt. I mean, the injuries, that's what is a killer. And for Chris Bryant, it sounds like he's getting ready to go on the IL, or he was placed on the IL. He had a 7-year, $182 million deal. And, you know, and I was looking at it, Bob, he's one of his last 20. And I think, was this a back thing with him?
Bad back.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's probably a huge part of it. But I'm glad I never had anything like that. But I'll tell you what, man.
Brutal.
One for the last 20. And then, you know, I was putting the numbers together. I mean, he started off really well. And kind of the opposite of Trevor Story. Because those two guys were two guys that we talked about. Chris Bryant getting him here as a third baseman. Trevor Story, possibly. And Trevor Story got off to kind of a struggling
start.
Terrible start.
Until he met the Mariners.
Seemed to ignite right about the time we rolled in town.
Yeah, yeah, pretty convenient how that worked out. We had people texting in before that series going, you wanted Story, how do you feel about it now? And then at the end of the series, it got kind of quiet. I couldn't find those people. And he's continued his hot streak, by the way. He's just a man on fire for that Boston team. Chris Bryant is a guy that even with the struggles you were talking about before he got hurt, he's batting .278, but he doesn't have any home runs. He's the power wasn't there, and maybe that's the back. I don't know. He's a guy. He's 30 years old, but you look at his time in the league. He doesn't have a ton of time in the league. He just turned 30 in January. But 2015 was his very first year, so it's not like he's been here forever. But he's a guy he's got a .342 on base, you know, in 17 games. He's only played 17 games for the Rockies to this point. So he was productive, not in the power way that they wanted. And listen, he was never a huge power hit. His best year was his second year is in the major leagues. He had 39 home runs, and then after that, he went over 30 one time. He hit 31. So he can hit for power, but he doesn't do it routinely every year, this 35, 40 home run guy. He's not that guy. But I was looking at this going, man, is this going to be a harbinger of things to come with him? Is this going to be one of those contracts where you just go, man, that's crisis averted there. He's just been nothing but an injury risk. Or is this just, hey, this is bad luck for him in the beginning, and when it's all said and done, they're going to be looking at a guy who's been incredibly productive for him.
Yeah, that's and like I said, the injuries are the things that just entirely derail you. But, you know, and also I just think it's an indication that, look, you could have gone and got Chris Bryant and maybe he ends up, you know, on the IL. Same thing. I mean, I don't know if, you know, this was something that maybe
I blame the Rockies
would have been different. Yeah, maybe it's the high altitude.
Yeah,
I don't know. But, you know. For him, that's something that, as I was saying at the top of the segment, that's what makes people sad. When you have injuries, we have a sad fan base right now.
Are you guys sad or mad? Mariner fans, yeah. 421-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Are you a sad fan base like Dave says you are? Or are you mad at what's going on with the Mariners? Which is it?
If we were on the East Coast, they'd be mad.
Oh, it'd be pure fury.
Yeah.
It would be absolute anger, Dave. There would be no conflating the two. It'd be very clear. But yeah, it's just interesting. Those were the two guys we spent a lot of time talking about. The idea of Paul Sewald, remember, was recruiting Chris Bryant to come here. They've got a relationship. They know each other. And we felt like, hey, this could be a possibility. He could end up here. And what a great deal that would be. And so far, it has not been a great deal for the Colorado Rockies. Very early, much like, you know, Trevor Story, for people that were looking at him and writing him off going, what a bust. Can't believe Boston paid him all that money and the Mariners wanted him. Aren't you glad they didn't get him now? No, I'm not. I'm not glad. And I was even less glad as the series went on with the Seattle Mariners. And he was just barely above .200 at that point. But now you're looking at a guy who's got 8 home runs, 33 runs driven in.
Wow.
I mean, and it's in a very short amount of time. So we'll see what he ends up being at the end of the year. But I would imagine he, along with Boston fans, are feeling much better about the acquisition of Trevor Story.
Yeah, you know, the last, about eight, nine games, Trevor Story is 11 for 23, and he's got 17 RBIs, is that right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. So, yeah, you just never know what you're going to get as far as that goes, and just going out and getting familiar names. And, you know, and I remember, people were kind of taking some shots at Jerry, like, hey, let's go all in and get this guy. But, you know, just because you go and get a guy like that, you never really know exactly what you're going to get. I mean, but I'm with you as always, like, I'll take the guy who's performed. Okay.
Yeah.
At least we know that he has done it. And typically that, you know, goes back to more about football, just because, you know, the young guys, you never know. The bust rate is always about 50-50. So, but yeah, I mean, that could have happened. I feel like it would have happened here.
with Chris either Bryant. Of these, with Chris Bryant, the back thing. Yeah, I mean, in the back, I can't believe of all the injuries you've had, your back was never one of them. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I mean, you've had a lot of surgeries, a lot of different injuries, but it's never been your back. That's
back's
pretty
been
impressive.
Always good.
Yeah, yeah. Especially considering you're running headfirst into walls immediately every single play. You know, it's going to hurt the neck, the spine, I would think. But yeah, as a guy who's dealt with back issues for a long time now,
it just takes you out, right?
Oh, I mean, it is just ridiculous how impactful it can be. I mean, it's just, you know, bottom of my feet being numb, shooting mm-hmm. pain down the glute, down the hamstring, down the calf, you know, getting in and out of a car, up and down out of a seat, just you know, walking around in your 30s feeling like you're in your 90s. It's no good, Dave.
Are you making the old man noise too when you
say, oh, no, more than that, I'm making the should be a patient in the hospital noise. It's just, yeah. Yeah, 13 years of jiu-jitsu did me no favors physically.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know.
And then the karate on top of
and
that.
And then the karate on top of the karate in the garage, Dave. It's just really took a toll on my body. Yeah. All right. Coming up, an update with Deshaun Watson might make it more difficult for any team like the Seahawks who may have an interest in Baker Mayfield. We'll tell you what that's about coming up. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Oh, some of our texters are so inadvertently funny when they're trying to make a very serious point.
Do you want to get into it?
No, right. No. I just off the air was enough of that person. But I couldn't even get through the entire text I was reading to you because you didn't practice on the text, so I had to read it to you.
Yeah.
But just what comes out of the mouth or into the mind and through the keyboard of some of our listeners is just, it's on another level. I can't, I'm like, wow, how did your mind get there?
You know what we should do is keep track and start pasting these onto a Word document, and we could have a book at some
point. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is one I'd have to explain to somebody. They'd be going, wait, somebody actually wrote that? That's what they said? Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty deep conspiracy theory.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, it was a good one. It was a good one. It gave me a good laugh. I appreciate that, 425. Jeez. Anyway.
Is he serious? Or she?
I assume. That's the hard part about text, is you can't interpret tone. Over whether somebody's sending you a text message on your phone or here or Twitter. Sometimes somebody's being sarcastic and joking. And you don't, that's why those emojis are so important, Dave.
No.
That's why you need the smiley face or the
puking.
That's
the one you send most often.
Well, there's a lot of that, and that's meant seriously. But there's a lot of, you know, you got to put the capital JK, just kidding, exclamation point, so as people don't think you're a screwball. But some people are just at peace with a lot of that. Okay, moving on. Roger Goodell, who does a great job of being a political figure in that, like a lot of head coaches and a lot of people out there, they can use a lot of words. And then at the end of the statement, you go, wait a minute, what did they say?
What did he say?
They said nothing. They said nothing. But, you know, as it pertains to Deshaun Watson, Roger Goodell was making a statement as to where the whole investigation into that matter stands.
We now have, obviously, at least resolution from the criminal side of it. Obviously, there's still civil charges that are going on. So our investigators hopefully will have access to more information. And that will be helpful, obviously, in getting to the conclusion of what are the facts and was there a violation of the personal conduct policy. But that determination will be made by a joint a disciplinary officer that was established by the NFLPA and the NFL.
I think we're going to have a new category of personal conduct violations here. It's going to come out of this one with Deshaun Watson.
So they're still looking into it. That's the takeaway. They're gathering facts. They'll come to a determination.
But there's no criminal charges.
There's no criminal charges.
Only
which is not, doesn't mean anybody's innocent. It's
right.
I mean, you know, you can go back to O.J. Simpson and things like that. Wins a criminal case, loses a civil case. The burden of proof is different in each case, blah, blah, blah. We've gone down this road. So it's, but that leads you to the whole, you know, Baker Mayfield aspect of that. And in his Monday Morning Quarterback article, Albert Breer explains why the Browns might end up keeping Baker around this season. Now, he wrote, the other avenue Mayfield could take here would be to double dip and take termination pay, in which case Cleveland would be stuck with the full $18.858 million. So even paying $12 or $13 million of freight would mean big savings for the Browns. If the team cuts Mayfield, the Browns will get no return. So in spending whatever the team is spending to facilitate a trade, it would also be buying itself a draft pick. So if they're, you know, trading him for a draft pick and we're going to pick up his salary or 80% or 50%, whatever it ends up being, they'll get a draft pick. And if they hold on to him and just put him on ice for the year, they could get a comp pick in 2024. So that's the situation the Browns are looking at, because it feels like if they keep him, he seems to make it clear he's done there. Is he going to go in? Is he going to play if Deshaun Watson gets hurt? And they say, all right, Baker, you're up. Is he going to be like, sorry, no.
Yeah,
I don't want to be here. Or it feels like that's a bad idea if they can avoid keeping him on the roster. You've got a disgruntled employee there.
Right.
It feels like a bad idea to keep that in the building, unless they can somehow soothe the feelings and come to some sort of agreement behind the scenes. Listen, we're gonna accommodate you. We're going to make things right. We're going to trade you as soon as we can, or whatever. We're going to pay you this, something to soothe the feelings that are hurt right now.
You know, we look at our quarterback situation going into this season thinking, yeah, it's going to be rough for a while. This is a weird one in Cleveland. I mean, especially with Deshaun Watson, who, you know, is the fan base going to be split on this? Are they going to be behind him? I'm sure your NFL, hardcore NFL fans will just block it out and say, you know, whatever. But Baker Mayfield's kind of endeared himself to those Cleveland fans.
I think playing hurt from game two on last year did a lot to, as much as he did throw interceptions and didn't play great and all of that, I think there's an appreciation for gutting it out.
Yeah, we went out there in 2019, and those fans, they're still very passionate. And, you know, I think Baker Mayfield, the kind of turnaround, I think people really appreciate that. You know, when somebody, I mean, because he was kind of a punk.
Yeah.
And he turned it around and became, you know, a leader on that team. And now you're going to bring in a guy like this that, you know, like I said, people are probably 50-50 on Deshaun Watson as to whether or not they want to accept him, you know, buy his jerseys, things like that. So, as this relates to the Seahawks, I still, you know, it's like, to me, it's like 2% chance that they sign them.
You're saying that even if the Browns were to cut him, he's a free, you're not picking up any of the 18 whatever million. He's a free agent. He's there to be had.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to, because you got to pick up the rest of the contract, right?
Well, no, not if they cut him.
Oh, you're saying if they cut him.
Not working out a trade, not draft picks.
No,
he's Browns just come to a point, hey, nobody's buying, nobody's biting on this. We just got to cut our losses.
Right.
He's now out there on his own, and he can sign for whatever
I guess if he wants to sign for, you know, the minimum or whatever. But I just think more than anything, it's about the reps. I think they understand that they're probably, you know, I shouldn't say that. I mean, look, every team, you think you're going to the playoffs every year. But, you know, you're kind of in this rebuilding mode and you want to build your team a certain way. And I don't know I don't think Baker Mayfield fits into that. But like I said, I mean, I feel like he's a pretty decent leader. He's grown up quite a bit. Remember Mark Schlereth telling us how much he hated Baker Mayfield because they got in a Twitter battle?
And, oh, that's right. They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
What was it about?
Well, Baker Mayfield, it was something about his rating or whatever. And I just remember Schlereth was like, you know, you haven't
dropped a pee of
whatever. Yeah.
In this
league. It was kind of gross the way he put it.
Yeah, yeah.
Into the NFL bucket. You haven't peed in the NFL bucket. So you don't even know what you're talking about. And they went back and forth on it. But yeah, I think he's turned things around since.
Does he think he's a football playing Jesse now?
According to Mark Schlereth. Yeah. So, yeah, I just don't see him as it's related to Seattle. I never thought that, you know, that they would end up signing Deshaun Watson, though. I mean, that to me is because Baker Mayfield had turned it around. And like you said, I mean, he went out and played hurt. They made the playoffs in 2020.
Had one playoff game. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, they won a game. They had the Chiefs, even though you knew watching that game that the Chiefs were eventually going to beat them. But, yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing for him, kind of a weird route that he's taken.
Well, and from the Browns' perspective, you have, again, we played Roger Goodell. There's not any real clarity there as to what the future holds for Deshaun Watson. Is he going to be suspended? Is he not going to be suspended? But they have to have a plan in place if he is suspended for 2 games, 4 games, 6 games, 8. We have no idea what that is, but you have to prepare for the possibility of that. I mean, there's precedent for it. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was suspended. He was never charged with anything. So he was accused multiple times, and they suspended him for personal conduct. So maybe that comes into play here, and the Browns need to look at, all right, well, if he's out X amount of games, who's the quarterback? And if Baker's still on the roster, is he willing to play? Is he even suiting up? What's that relationship like at that point? So it's a weird – him and Garoppolo, completely different situation. But even, I think, over the weekend, the Niners were saying, we expect him to be traded. You know, I think that was coming out, yet – he gave his goodbye press conference. He was all but out of there, and he's still there right now. So those are two of the more interesting quarterback situations, Mayfield and Garoppolo, and where do they land? When does it happen?
And Garoppolo can say that I won 2 playoff games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, did he win them?
He helped.
Maybe, maybe not.
He helped.
He didn't hurt him.
All right. Are the Mariners in the process of trying to swing a big trade? We'll dive into where the help might come from for this lineup. That's coming up. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com.